Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Sowers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
To the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast at Inside Lacrosse, featuring Big Ten Network, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my Hopkins homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, let's get it. What is up, Dix? What's going on, man? We've never done a June podcast before.
Like I said, we couldn't leave our fans hanging, and what happened last week? I mean, was that heart-pounding final just too much for you to take? You needed a few more days to collect yourself and
I was laid out, settled down.
I mean, you didn't want to do one last week.
After a historic Memorial Day weekend, I didn't have anything left in the tank. No, it was a short week, and then I come back to work on Tuesday. And then I'm like, wow, if we're into a pod, we need to do it like now. Of course, we've done this several times. This is the first time we've actually done a podcast in June, like a post season one. I think we've talked about it a few years, and we always have these grand aspirations for something that's like, like the Howard Stern Emmys one of those things where we're like playing clips and going back and coaches interviews and funny things that happen. And that's a lot of production. And at the end of the season, I just don't have the energy for it. So for transparency purposes, Dixie has been like, can we do a podcast? And I'm thinking, man, okay, sure. What are we going to talk about? And then I started making some notes, and there's a lot to talk about.
Yes.
And
there's a lot that's been going on in the world of lacrosse.
There are. And there's also been a lot of things happening in our own little worlds, starting with Matt Dixon, high school graduate.
Yes.
You know, there was a time when he came over to my house a couple of years ago with a bunch of his buddies, and they were doing some project. I think they were sophomores, about podcasting and technology or something. And I looked at him and his friends, and I was like, these guys are never getting out of high school. These are going to be high school dropouts. And look at him now. He's off to college. He's going to be a Loyola Greyhound. These pictures of him in tuxedos and dressed up. He's a young man, and you should be very proud of him.
Well, thank you. We are. He had a great, kids grow up. Loyola had a lot to do with that. Sorry. I actually just got something caught in my throat. No.
It's all right if you are. It's okay if you are. This is the one moment where you can show some real human emotion, Dixon.
Oh yeah. That's me. Yeah. I'm the stoic, no pulse guy. It kind of hasn't sunk in yet, I guess. I think it'll probably hit when he goes to college in a couple months and he's not going back to Loyola, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. He's not driving himself into, Towson every day and his brother. So that's when it'll probably hit. But no, my wife and I are really proud of Matt. He won some awards. He won the C. Marklin Kelly for sportsmanship and leadership and athletic accomplishments. And then he also got an award at graduation. It's an award given by the Mothers Club for leadership and sportsmanship, both on and off the athletic field. So he shared it with a good friend of his, John Dixon, who's a 6'4" basketball player. And Matt is a 5'9" lacrosse soccer player. So it was cool. But ever since they met each other freshman year, they call each other their twin. So it was pretty cool that the twins won the award together. And they were sitting next to each other at graduation and watching them pop up and embrace and give each other high fives to win that award was pretty cool. But it goes fast, man. It really, really goes fast. I can remember when him and his brother were younger, thinking about sending him to Loyola and what high school was going to look like. And now he's graduated. So, yeah, it's been a fun week. And then all the stuff, it's not just the graduation, but all the stuff that the kids haven't been able to do for the last year. Yeah. So, you know, a lot That's of parties and he had a senior prom the other night. We're recording this on Thursday. He's going to another prom tonight. He went to another girl's prom a few weeks ago. So, quick story. March of 2020, my wife and I are talking. A bunch of dances were coming up. Should we rent a tuxedo or just buy him a tuxedo? So we buy him a tuxedo. March, when do we buy the tuxedo? It's like went to Macy's like March 10th. And as he was putting on the tuxedo to go to this prom a couple of weeks ago, it's like, he never wore it. He still had like the tags and stuff from the alterations and all that good stuff. I picked it up. I didn't pick it up until October, November of last year, because like things were just shut down. But yeah, the receipt, the order for the alterations was like March 10th, and he finally got to wear it in May of 2021. So that's like how much these kids miss, but it's been cool, man. It's been a cool couple of weeks.
Yeah. You talk about what these guys have missed. And I mean, this is something I don't even think we understand. We know you've seen it with your own kids and what they've missed and missed out on and the traditional stuff. And it is awesome that they're to see the pictures of them with their friends and they're doing the things that high school students or kids should be doing. It's great. But the long-term effects and I guess, and I was saying this last year, you know, last year at this time I had two of my sister's three kids. One was graduating from college and one was graduating from high school. And the fact that they, you know, they're both missing out on their senior year and all that mm-hmm. fun stuff that happens even at those different stages of your life, college and high school, it's just a shame. This is a real shame. The only saving grace that they have is that every one of their friends is every one of their generation and their like cohort or whatever is the same situation. So, anyone that they meet at college or will have had the same terrible shared experience and they can commiserate in that. If that's a good thing, I guess so. I mean, it's not as if, you know, sometimes things happen and, you know, there's a natural disaster somewhere and, you know, a hurricane hits New Orleans and the people in that region have to deal with that, but other people can't really understand what they had to go through. But I think everyone who has been in high school or, you know, will remember this year and all of their colleagues and their peers who went through that same terrible shared experience. So, I'm just happy. It's great to see those photos, man. Great to see these photos of people getting back together. June is a huge, you said a lot of things going on. So in my family, my three oldest brothers, their birthdays are June 9th, June 11th, and June 12th.
Wow.
That's some good Catholic family planning. My dad was a football coach. So
mom could not be in labor in August or September.
Well, that's true. But also if you wanted to spend any time with the newborns before football started, they had to be born at a certain time of year. That changed later. You know, there's six of us and my birthday's in October. My brother's little brother's is in November. So I guess at some point, they decided that having a baby during football season wasn't the worst thing in the world.
Well, when you already have other ones running around,
I guess
you're experienced and grizzled veterans at that point.
But it's funny. So and then
Matt's birthday is on Monday, June 14th.
AB, you know, our buddy AB, his birthday is today. So his birthday is June 10th. My buddy Brad's birthday is this. I think it's June 12th. I have a niece whose birthday is June 2nd. Another one whose birthday is June 25th. And two nephews whose birthdays are June 12th and June 18th. G's birthday. So it's like, man, there's in between that and graduations, Father's Day and stuff, June is just a killer month. for the Flynn family, and always has been really fun. But people go in a lot of different directions, and it's a fun, it's fun. And it's really cool to see photos of, yeah, of friends and family members doing good stuff, fun stuff, getting with their friends and family to do, getting back together. So, man, let's go.
You mentioned those birthdays. In my family, Matt's the only outlier. So me, my wife, my father, we're all January birthdays. My mom, my brother, my niece, August, and Owen, my younger son, Owen, August. So we're a January, August birthday family. Matt's the only outlier in June. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. In my house, you know, my birthday is the 6th of October and Hannah's is the 4th.
Oh, wow.
My wife is the 20th of December and Bennett's the 26th. So there we have these.
Oh, so you're December, October. My birthday is January 8th. My wife's birthday is January 9th.
Wow.
So like literally I have one day, over, which is fine. Cause I'm not, you know, I know some, I have some friends that it's like their birthday week or month. And it's like, what are you, 10? You're an adult.
I know some grown-ups who are like that. And you're like, come on.
Exactly.
Well, my birthday got taken away from me. So my birthday is the 6th of October. My little brother, Mike, had twins.
Oh, wow.
On a boy on my birthday. Okay. So for a bunch of years, it was just the twins' birthday. And then,
you're like Molly Ringwald in 16 Candles. No one remembered it was your birthday.
That's happened to me for sure. When you're the fifth kid in a family, it's your birthday is insignificant.
But did you end up with the hot guy?
I did. And I'm looking at him right now through this Zoom call. Look at this. So check this out. So Hannah's due date was like October 5th. And I was like, we're taking back the 6th. We're reclaiming this. And it's going to be the youngest Flynn family member's birthday. Yeah. And you got to hold it out. Whatever happens, you can't have this baby until the 6th. And Hannah was born on the 4th. So, but it's sort of changed the dynamic a little bit. So now there's like this birthday, you know, it's not just the twins' birthday anymore. Hannah's included in that too. Hey, Dix, one of our listeners sent out a, when we're going to get to this, the Syracuse coaching change, but there was a video, Quince Cues from like the early 90s. And he has Gary Gate, Dave Petromala, Dave Cottle, Mike Morrill, Frank Kelly. And they just go through like, you know, basically the basic tips to play lacrosse. And I just couldn't get over the equipment. Mike Morrill is wearing these giant gloves. This is when he was coaching at Duke. Again, this is for your young guys. This is Jackson Morrill's dad.
Yeah.
Who is a Hall of Fame player. Was a Hopkins Blue Jay. And his grandfather and his great-grandfather are all in the national. So Mike, his dad.
Yeah.
Who was Mickey.
No, Mickey Bill.
Bill Morrill. Bill Morrill and then Kelso Morrill.
Yeah.
Right. So they're all in the Hall of Fame. So Mike Morrill, Jackson Morrill's dad, was a great player too. And he's got this Duke lacrosse like parka on because it's filmed in like February or March. And it's the biggest, puffiest thing you've ever seen. I couldn't believe the equipment these guys are wearing. He cut in a lot of clips of like your teammates from Hopkins because that's when. Showing like roll dodges and guess who? What Hopkins player of your era had a great roll dodge?
Of my year, Todd Cavallaro.
Yeah, Cavi. But so he was on it. I think John Marcus was playing goal on a bunch of clips. Reardon, Picola, Pete Jacobs, some Milford Marchand was number 5. Matt Jackson, like long stick midfielder, or like
Jax was shorty. When he got to an offensive middie, when he got to Hopkins, and by the time he graduated, he was a long stick middie.
And it's just funny how like I could just look at the guys and remember them based on their numbers. But anyway, the equipment was driving me crazy, like how big it is, and it made me think of the new Maverick EKG shoulder pads, chest protectors that are in stock for all players now. And you can get upgraded performance or protection that meets the new Noxie safety standards. You can shop the whole line. lax.com/EKG. That's lax.com/EKG. And these pads are not only much more safer and protective than what those guys were wearing, but slimmer, sleeker, tight fitting, and better all around. I can't even, it was crazy what you wore when you were playing, man.
That, so the shoulder pads were the ones that we tried to make the most minimally obstructive. There were guys that would, so I remember I had, I think I mentioned I had the Cooper. I cut the shoulder cuffs off. So basically it was just like, you know, covered my chest and my upper back. But no, those shoulder pads, the ones you described from Maverick, my boys already have them. They use them. They're incredibly sleek, very safe, very sturdy. It's a great piece of equipment. The thing that gets me, the gloves that we used to wear. You mentioned Mike Morrill's gloves.
Giant.
And so we used to be able to cut the palms out. And I can't remember what year, but playing in the old MSA, now the MIAA, we played NCAA rules. They outlawed cutting out the palms of the gloves. So you had, not only did you have these big ass bulky gloves, but you had this big thick strip of leather that you had to break in. So we used to take sandpaper and sand them down as much as we could to make it as thin as possible to get a feel for the stick. But, and then when, God forbid if it rained and that leather got wet, I mean, good God.
The stuff, they're just so big. It looks like, I don't think kids can even comprehend it. It looked like they're just,
gigantic. Gigantic.
I can't even.
It's like if you're a girl, it's like wearing a long, flowy, puffy dress compared to like a mini skirt or something like that. It's just like so much extra. Yes. So much extra.
And the thing that got me the most, though, it's not just how the gloves really jump out at you because you're like, whoa, they don't look like that anymore. But no. The off the field, the performance apparel, I mean. Oh, you know who else? Chris Steer. I'm pretty sure it was Chris Steer, was demoing something with Petro. And he had like his full like sweats on, like, but they weren't sweat. It was like the, whatever the rain gear would have been, like cold weather gear. And yeah, it's just so big and bulky. And you're just like, man, sideline gear is so much better now. It's you know, waterproofing is better. It just fits better. It's not as, I mean, I don't, man.
Yeah.
Anyway,
times have changed.
Yeah, you guys are lucky, man. Like, gear's just way better now than it used to be. So, Dix, let's get to some more lacrosse stuff. Where do you want to start? You want to talk about your championship weekend experience and recap that a little bit? I think that's been done at this point, but certainly some incredible lacrosse, especially the championship game.
Yeah, so I was up in East Hartford, Connecticut for Westwood One Radio, doing the semifinals and the final. But then on that Sunday, I had an opportunity to do a D2 championship as well as a D3 final. So that was really, the D3 game was epic. I mean, that was just a fantastic game. RIT beat Salisbury in, I don't think it was it double overtime? Yeah, double overtime. So that was a fantastic game, but worked again with Dave Ryan. Rhino came into the weekend a little under the weather, so I don't know if you got to listen or not, but his voice wasn't as
sturdy
as it was in the past.
He loved the North Carolina helmets.
He couldn't get it right. If Dave gets a hold of something, so he's a Syracuse guy, and man, he gets excited talking about, you know, obviously there wasn't much to get excited about with Syracuse this year, but Lemoyne, you know, being near Syracuse, RIT, upstate. And anytime he had a chance to talk about like the Lake region or the Skinny Atlas, and he kept saying, he's like, you got to get there. You got to get there. So like, it's like an inside joke between myself and Dave. I always like to bust his chops on the vacation spots, because look, I've covered many a championship D3 level with Salisbury. I'm not talking about Ocean City. You know, I'm not talking about Secrets and Longboard Cafe and all that stuff. But so he gets a real kick out of that. But no, I got to hand it to Dave, man. He was a trooper. He was a warrior playing hurt, bags of cough drops. He had the chloroseptic spray. I mean, the guy was doing everything to keep his voice. He actually was great on Monday after really, you know, getting struggling on Sunday, just because of the wear and tear on his voice. And we had such good games and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, the semifinal between Carolina and Virginia, I thought was outstanding. Either team could have won that game. The difference was goaltending. Alex Rhode ended up with 15 saves. I believe Colin Krieg ended up with 5 for Carolina. That was the difference in that game. Second game, Maryland-Duke. Maryland was just on fire. Jared Bernhardt was fantastic. Logan McNaney, 17 saves, was incredible. I've never seen Duke look so helpless in a lacrosse game before. They had nothing. They had no answers for Maryland, offensively, defensively, nothing. I've never seen a Duke team look so out of it. Then you go to the D2 championship game, Lenore Ryan making their first appearance. Lemoyne had been there before. I think this was their 6th or 7th championship that they won, but that game was close at halftime, and then the Dolphins ran away with it in the second half. RIT Salisbury, that championship game. The interesting thing with that, Dan, was RIT was smaller but more athletic, I thought, and they played more as a team. What I mean by that is a lot of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 passes goal, the one more. Salisbury relied on their size and their physicality, a lot of unassisted goals, a lot of one-on-ones. Salisbury seemingly had that game won. We're running it out in overtime. And then something I've never, ever, ever seen before, as a Salisbury player was up near the midfield line being chased by 2 RIT players. A defenseman for Salisbury reached over and clipped a RIT kid, took him down to the ground, actually. So a change of possession, and the ball went to RIT. I thought the restart was not great. I thought the restart happened way in front of where the infraction took place. But nonetheless, I mean, boom, boom, goal, RIT ties it. We're going to overtime. And then the game winner, it was just 7 seconds left in the shot clock for RIT off of the end line, a spot feed out front. And Barnable catches it for Rochester and sticks it. It was unbelievable, but just an amazing lacrosse game between 2 fantastic teams. And that was just the setup for Monday when you had Maryland and Virginia playing each other. That's the funny thing about, you know, Virginia, if you think about 2019, after they beat Duke in overtime and Yale hammered Penn State coming into that final, you're like, Yale's going to work these guys. Yale is going to win another national title. And Virginia dominated that game. Similar situation this time around. A lot of people, myself included, are like, yeah, this is Maryland's year. They're going to put it to Virginia. But credit the Cavaliers. They got out early. I thought, Cade Sostad did a great job on Jared Bernhardt. Connor Schellenberger won his matchup with Nick Grill. It's the only matchup I've seen all year Nick Grill lose 1-on-1. And Schellenberger beat him 1-on-1 twice for goals in different ways. First one, he bodied him. Second one, he faked the body, stepped away, ran around Nick Grill. But it was Virginia's day. And hats off to the Cavaliers. 16-11. Maryland was down. They come back. They almost, you know, that goal by Matt Moore proved to be the game winner. But, I mean, what an incredible lacrosse game. Then Alex Rhode at the end makes the save on Luke Wehrman. Incredible lacrosse game. I'll tell you, of all the memories I have of that weekend, the final shot, if you will, Luke Wehrman takes a shot, Rhode saves it, ball rebounds out, Virginia's able to get it, they chuck it up the field. Wehrman was hurt on that play. Like, at first, you know, he's bent over, he's got his head on the ground, his knees are on the ground. So you're like, oh, maybe he's just disappointed that, you know, or heartbroken that he missed the shot. No, he was really hurt. The first guy to go up to him to pick him up, make sure he was okay, check on him medically, was Jared Bernhardt. That speaks volumes to what, you know, we already knew what kind of kid and athlete Jared Bernhardt is, but that just hammered it home. Like, here's a kid who just lost his final game, heartbreaking fashion. You know, he had every right to bury his head, lay on the ground, whatever. He saw his teammate was hurt. He goes up checking on him. And then the Maryland medical staff came in to take care of Wehrman. But what a fantastic weekend. What a great weekend of lacrosse. And what a way to cap off 2021 in a season where One, we didn't know if we were going to have a season. Two, we didn't know how long it was going to last. Three, are we even going to make it to championship weekend? Four, are the teams going to be able to play? Because how many times have we seen an athlete here, an athlete there test positive and their season ends? So it was just
before in the conference.
Exactly. So I know that was a lot of meat on that bone, but man, I had to get it out. It's what I would have talked about last week if you'd have given me the chance, but now we got it. And what a fantastic cap to the 2021 season.
Yeah. There was so much talent in the college ranks this year from, grad students and fifth year seniors and all of that. And then an outstanding freshman class where not many of them really got to play or get on the field because the depths on a lot of the top teams, especially, I don't know if we'll see, well, you know what, next year could be just as good. I mean, we're certainly losing some really high end talent to the pros and just from graduation, but I think the next couple of years of college lacrosse could be really good when kids taking that extra year of eligibility and using it. But you're right. What a fantastic way to end the most unusual season we've ever seen. And for fans who and players who missed out on the tournament and the end of the season in 2020, it was as good as it could possibly be, that championship game. It was deserved. I've been saying that a lot this year, that fans deserved to be treated, and that was exactly what you could have wished for, in that championship game.
No doubt. And Rentschler Field, hats off to the grounds crew there. The amount of rain. So I've never been a part of a more cold and rainy championship weekend. I mean, Saturday was like 45 degrees. Sunday was 47. Monday was fantastic. I shouldn't say fantastic. The weather got better as the day went on, but it rained Friday, rained Saturday, rained Sunday, and Monday that field was still really in really, really good shape. Only complaint, the traffic management. I barely made my flight on Monday. It was a 5:05 flight. I got to the gate. I got to security at 5:05. Your boy still has some moves, was able to get through security, sprinted to the gate. And I've never been in the situation where they're like closing the door and they're like, wait a second, I think it's him. And they're like, are you Mark Dixon? I'm like, yes, yes. And I got phones. I got my wallet. Like, I'm a mess. And they're like, where's your boarding? Get your boarding pass. I couldn't find it on my phone. So like, just give us your ID. And they're like, they're rating. They're like, we got him. He's here. We got him. And so I walk. I'm walking onto the plane. And of course, I'm that guy now. I'm the one that held the plane up for however long. I was
probably sweaty.
Oh, I was sweating. And I was like, I was like dead sprint for like a good 500, 600 yards. Probably more than that. I don't know how long it was, but it was like, I was flying. And I hear this. Yeah, God, you can make it, Coach Dixon. It's Lee Corrigan is on the flight. Then I see Ryan Corrigan. Then I see A.B. Bilello's on the flight too. But they were like, oh, hey, what's up? And like, they were all – so it was – and, of course, all you have left are middle seats. And I think there were, like, three or four middle seats that were unoccupied. Everyone's looking at you like, do not sit here. Don't make it us. So, two unfortunate souls got me sitting in between them for the less than an hour flight back to Baltimore. But, Rentschler Field, I'm not quite sure that I'm sold that that's a great location. Just because there's really no central hub of activity, no like signature restaurants. I did have some really good meals. I ate at a place called the Blind Pig, which was a pizza place, but you could get like barbecue and burnt ends and stuff on your pizza, which was incredible.
Yeah, you sent me a photo. It looked great.
Yeah, did I send it to you? Yeah, got that. I don't know if that's a long-term solution. I do like the fact, if we're going to move it back to a college campus, let's look at College Park. Let's look at Rutgers. Let's look at Naval Academy. I know I'm missing some others.
It's hosted by a college, but it's not even on a campus.
No, it's UConn. UConn, I guess, is the, that's the Rensselaer's UConn, but the host was Fairfield. And yeah, it was like all kinds of twists and turns, but still the folks, very nice people. The field itself was great. I think, you know, the size of it was really, really good. I think the weather kept a lot of people away. I also think, you know, you didn't have Hopkins, you didn't have Syracuse. I think if Rutgers would have made it, the attendance maybe could have been gotten a bump of maybe 5,000, 7,000, something like that. But, you know, maybe that's a little too ambitious thinking as well.
It's there again next year, correct?
It might be in Foxborough next year. Because I think, what was it, 2021? No, 20 was supposed to be Philadelphia. So 21, yeah, it's back at Rensselaer because they got it for at least two, right? 21 and 22?
I think they have it for multiple years.
Okay, yeah, you're probably, I haven't looked, but you're probably right. Hofstra, could we do Championship Weekend at Hofstra? Is Hofstra too small? That's a great quarterfinal site. Love that.
Too small.
Quarterfinal site.
40,000 seat type of range that Rensselaer is. This seems like a really sweet spot for this championship, that maybe you can sell it out and really have like a packed house and not have upper decks of a football stadium that's NFL stadium that's empty. But
yeah,
a great fitting cap to the end of a really fantastic season. Let's talk about some postseason awards, Dix. And I have to start with the All-America team. You know, we've talked about the IL All-America team, which I fully subscribe to. But U.S. ILA All-Americans, I ranted about this with you over like some text messages when it came out. I don't know who's responsible for this. And I'm sorry that I'm going to trash you. But this is a joke. This press release of the U.S. ILA All-American team is a joke.
Yeah, that's right. You're
upset. I am looking at this right now. It comes out. It's a PDF. Has the U.S. ILA logo on it, which is very modern looking. But the rest of it is from 1997. It is pasted Excel cells onto a sheet, probably a Word document, that is then PDF'd and sent out. There's no written anything. There's not even like a story like, hey, here's the national award winners, or here's a little bit about each of the first teamers, or anything like you would see with an all conference type of thing. And then it is just, there's no, again, Inside Lacrosse All-America team is a great honor, and it's picked by the media, but this is like the one thing.
This is the one.
How about attack Jared Bernhardt, Maryland? How about you put like height and weight, where he's from, what year in school he is, like senior? It's just literally position, first name, last name, and not even together, not written. It's in separate Excel cells, and then the school. And then here's the thing that gets me: they put like University of Virginia, University of Denver, Duke University, but then it's just Rutgers, just Lehigh, you know? So there's no consistency in any of it, how they do it. It doesn't seem to particularly be in alphabetical order, either by player's last name or by school. So I guess it's in the number of votes guys got at each position. So you can see like, oh, Jared Bernhardt, I think he got the most votes of all the attackmen. That's because that has to be the order that it's in, because otherwise it's just a slap together with no rhyme or reason. And then you just go on to the second team, the third team. It's just, look, whoever is responsible for this, if you're listening to this, call me next year. I will put this together. I will volunteer my time. I mean, why do we do this podcast, Dix? Is it for the money and the accolades and the ladies?
I thought for you it was the Twitter followers.
Yep, the Twitter followers. Yeah, sure. No, we do it. It's a labor of love.
Yes,
we love the game. We like talking about it. This would be a labor of love for me. I will design and put out your press release next year for the All-American teams. I need about a few hours notice. You know, if I knew when it was going to, like, I could make this look good in an hour, and I'll look up all the information. You can just give me this slop with attack Ethan Walker, University of Denver honorable mention, and I will go in and put he's a senior, he's, you know, from this hometown, he went to this high school. I'll make it look good. But my goodness, this is embarrassing for the sport that this is what comes out from the US ILA All-American.
So
end rant.
No, look, you're very passionate about it. You worked and sports information offices and athletic offices throughout your professional life. So
and
I understand.
And a media company.
And a media company, absolutely. So how does this compare to you? Did you compare this to years past? Has it always been done this way, or do you feel like it was just
Again, it looks like it was made from 1997. It's Excel cells pasted into a Word document and sent out. It's, again, I don't want to trash the person any more than I have. I'm not a fan. And it takes so little effort to make it really look a lot better. And that's the thing that bugs me.
You've just sold yourself short. You could have maybe pimped your services out for a much higher wage potentially, but you're basically saying you'll do this for free. All you need is an hour or two.
Yeah.
And you're set. All
just right. Give it, you want to put this out on the Friday morning of championship weekend, get it to me by the close of business on Thursday. Mm-hmm. As long as we're not putting a pod out, because I got to edit the pod that night.
Yeah.
But well, you know, maybe get a couple extra hours.
They may need to give it to you a couple days ahead of time, like Monday or Tuesday. So you knock it out.
There you go. All right. All right. Let's move on. The Twarton Award went to Jared Bernhardt. And I don't think once Maryland made it to the semifinals, it seemed like it was going to be his award, right?
This was the one year where I felt that the Tewaraton was sewn up, I don't want to say mid-year, but by the time the Big Ten tournament came around, I thought that Jared Bernhardt had it sewn up. He had just had so many great moments. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, if he would have completely crashed and burned in the Big Ten tournament or the NCAA tournament, and somebody like Chris Gray would have stepped up, Pat Kavanaugh would have stepped up, more so than they had throughout the year, then maybe they could have won it. But Bernhardt was clearly the best player in college lacrosse this year. And it wasn't just me saying it or you saying it. I mean, you talk to any coach, you know, our prep for championship weekend, you know, talking to Lars Tiffany, talking to John Donowski, talking to Coach Bresci, they're all saying the same thing. You know, Jared Bernhardt's the best player in college lacrosse. So, and those are guys that even had guys that were up for the Tewaraton, you know. So it was his year. It was his year. Other than not winning the national title, it was Jared Bernhardt's year. He put together a very special college lacrosse season and, you know, matched up on JT Giles Harris, the Smizer winner, you know, best defenseman in college lacrosse, was dominant in that matchup. He was fantastic against Keelty of Notre Dame. And then on the flip side, you had Grill shut down Pat Kavanaugh, and you had Grill shut down Michael Sowers. So I think Grill was that was a big omission for me off the first team. Nick Grill, not on defense. But, you know, I think we've talked all year that Makar and Grill, maybe having two hurt each of them in the individual case. So both were second team All-Americans, but Jared Bernhardt's year, man, that was his year as an individual player.
He graduates as Maryland's all-time leading scorer. And he also set the record for goals and points in a season.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to look.
Where does he rank, in your opinion, all time among Twarton winners?
You know, I'm not really good at that. I don't really like to compare, but he's different. I think the combination of size, speed, athleticism, creativity, stick skills. I mean, I think he's most comparable to Pat Spencer from Loyola, who is also a quote unquote freak athlete. Then you look at Matt Rambo, they're completely different players. But Rambo's still one of the best, not only all time at Maryland, but in the game. And he won a national championship, something that Spencer and Bernhardt did not do. So
Jared Bernhardt won a national championship.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. He won in 17 with Rambo. My apologies. You always, isn't that crazy? Like you forget that you always equate it to their last act. No, he did. You're absolutely right. But I just think, like, is that the prototype now that we're going to see win the Tewaraton going forward? The Pat Spencer, Jared Bernhardt type players, you know, the guys who aren't just lacrosse players, but Spencer played collegiate basketball. Bernhardt has already said he's going to go back to Ferris State and try to play football. Or at least that's what's been reported.
It reminds me of the first Twarton winner, Doug Shanahan. Awesome football player, right?
Yeah, he played football at Hofstra, and he got a tryout with the Jets. Mm-hmm. And I think he may have made their practice squad, if I remember correctly. Yeah, and that's the thing. I'd have to like actually have a list in front of me to remember all the Tourathon winners. You know, Kyle Harrison is another guy that stands out, winning a Tourathon. All the different things that he did on the lacrosse field. But Bernhard is definitely, you know, he's a unique animal to have won that.
Dix, let's talk about breaking news on Sunday night that John Jesko is going to retire and Gary Gabe was going to become the new head coach of the men's program, Syracuse University. Big news. How did you first hear about it? How did you take on the news? And what do you think this means for the Syracuse lacrosse program?
So it was last weekend. I want to say it was like Friday or Saturday is when I started. I was getting texts, and it wasn't the volume of texts. It wasn't the quantity of texts. It was the quality, meaning it was coming from two or three people that I really, really trust. I'm really close with, and I know that are very close to the game. And when I got that information, I wasn't like, no way, this is so far-fetched. No way this is happening. I'm like, yeah, I can see this happening. I mean, if you couple the poor performance by the Syracuse men's lacrosse team this year, the Chase Scanlon incident, the behavior of the team and their first round loss to Georgetown, I'm just like, I don't understand. I don't see how Coach Desko can come back from all that. And especially when you have names like Gary Gate floating around. John Galloway is somebody that's been floating around as a name, as a possible replacement for when Coach Desko decided to hang it up. So that's when I started hearing about it. And then watching it unfold over the last couple of days, I just think too many people knew about it, whether it was rumor or fact or a done deal. It just, I guess, the school felt like too many people knew about it, and they had to kind of jump the gun somewhat to make the announcement. I did watch Coach Desko's press conference. I thought it was good. I originally only got the first 8 minutes, and I thought that was it. And I'm like, that's not a good way to go out. But then I watched the other, 30 minutes, because it was around 38, 40 minutes long. And he answered questions, and I thought he was as candid as he could have been. But I think it's clear to me that it wasn't – I think Coach Desko did want to come back. It does appear that he did want to come back, but the circumstances weren't going to allow it. It does go to an alum, which – and it's hard – I mean, how crazy is it that for as long as Syracuse has been playing lacrosse, this is only their fifth head coach in the history of the program? It's amazing, isn't it?
That is a testament to stability. And how long of those years was there a Simmons on the staff? Let's put it that way. Three generations.
Yeah.
Of two as a head coach and one as a, you know, loyal, trusted assistant of Coach Desko been on that staff. It's really been, you know, a family affair there. And Desko's been a part of the greatness of it. Let's put it that way.
Oh, no doubt. You know, as no a player, doubt. 46 years. 46 years.
All 11 championships he's been there for, you know, six as an assistant coach, five as a head coach. It's a Hall of Fame career anyway you slice
no
it.
No question.
And the move to you're right. It's a logical move. And people have talked about this for years that, you know, Gary Gate could be the head coach of the men's program. He certainly proved himself as a head coach and the leader of a program. He's done that for the women's team. But I can't think of another situation where the coach of a women's sport became the coach of of a men's sport. I can't, you know, there's certainly places where they, you know, the situation isn't applicable, but you think of it, whether it's basketball, soccer, you know, lacrosse, or the games at the college, you know, maybe in tennis or something at a college where, mm-hmm. or swimming. A lot of schools, you know, smaller schools even have you just have one coach who oversees both the men's and women's program kind of thing. But like I can't think of another situation like this. I can't, where the women's coach becomes the head men's coach. I just never. Yeah. So, and Gary's a one of a kind, you know, he possibly the greatest player of all time. He's proved himself, you know, as assistant coach and as a head coach. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
My biggest question is, so he's stayed involved in the men's game with what, Team Canada. He's still involved, yep, on the men's side there. My biggest question from him moving, so his familiarity with the men's game, his ability to coach the men's game is not a question for me after being involved with Syracuse women for so long. My question is the discipline aspect. If you watch his women's teams at Syracuse, incredibly talented, very athletic, very skilled. I remember in 2014, I was a sideline reporter for ESPN when they lost to, I believe it was Maryland, in the national championship game. I don't remember the exact numbers, but Syracuse, let's say Maryland had four fouls in that game, or, you know, two yellow cards. Syracuse had 20 fouls and at least double, maybe triple yellow cards. I think yellow cards were a thing back then. I'm sorry. It's been 7 years, so I'm trying to remember. But I just remember they fouled a lot. Look at their championship game this past, a couple weeks ago, against Boston College. Similar situation. They're just very aggressive, and they foul a lot. One thing I think the Syracuse program needs right now, based on the Scanlon, based on, you know, the behavior of the team and the loss to Georgetown, et cetera, discipline. And, you know, will he bring that to that program? I'm not saying he won't. You know, I think the off the field stuff is going to resolve itself. You know, you saw that men's team was not having Chase Scanlon and his activities. I think it's the on field stuff. You know, how will that team play? What discipline will they show? Will they be a lot? Will they foul a lot, over aggressive, et cetera? But that leads us to, I guess, the second part of this equation, which everybody keeps hearing, and that is the possibility of Dave Petromala, former head coach at Johns Hopkins University, coming into the Carrier Dome to be the defensive coordinator for Gary Gate.
That would certainly probably help the discipline aspect of the mm-hmm. program, and that could be one of Petro's responsibilities. But that is that's a coaching staff, man.
You're talking potentially the greatest offensive player in the game, potentially the greatest defensive player in the game.
And both, again, they're not just players. We're talking about guys,
incredible
who are
coaches,
established coaches,
yeah,
who championship pedigree and lots of Final Fours and Coach of the Year awards and things like that. It's I've heard that Pat March will stay on as the offensive coordinator.
I've heard that as well. I heard again, this is not it's good resources, but I haven't seen it in writing. I do believe that he has been re-upped or will be retained for the offensive coordinator role at Syracuse.
Dix, as we wrap up the season, I want to do a give and go with you, but I also want to talk about some of our listeners. So which one do you want to do first?
Let's do listeners.
All right. Well, we have some loyal listeners, and we certainly appreciate them. And I don't want to give an award out or anything, but, you know.
Listener, L-O-Y, listener,
I love the engagement. There's Abundance Lax, who reaches out to us a lot. There's Ted Moon, Coach Moon.
Ted Moon, the only person to do the whip as a guest.
My friend, Brian Remortal, one of Mad Dog McCone's old buddies. He's a Maryland guy. It was fun to connect with him. And Craig McMichael might be like listener of the year.
Yeah.
But one guy who reached out to me, he started listening to our podcast. He lives in Bradenton, Florida. And he was looking
IMG,
for...
That's IMG territory.
I know. But this guy is my old college roommate, Tom Bogger.
I remember Tom. Football
captain.
Guy.
Yeah, captain of the football team, a strong safety, and just a badass. He graduated. He was ROTC, graduated from Hopkins, went to Penn Law School, joined the FBI, ooh, and he's been an FBI agent in mostly Southwest Florida for most of his career, and he's retiring in June. 25 years at the FBI.
Sheesh. I am an FBI agent. What's that from?
That's from Point Break, right?
Buddy.
He's the supervisory special agent for all of like Southwest Florida at the FBI. He's retired. But anyway, he's got a son. His son, Tommy Bogger, is, I think he's like 13. I was talking to Boggs a couple of weeks ago, and he said he was looking to try to get the Hopkins Maryland game online. They don't get the Big Ten Network or something where he lives, so he's trying to find a game, and he comes across our podcast and he starts listening to it. He's like, "Oh my god, I can't believe you do this with Dixie." So he says hello, by the way, and he likes listening to us. And I said, "Yeah, sure. We do it every week. There's a lot more there.
You can go listen." And so we got like, what, 3 or 4 years worth if you really want to get crazy.
I don't think he's got the time. Well, he's retiring, so maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's on his riding mower, you know, pop the earbuds in.
I don't think he rides a mower. He lived at the beach, man. He lived on Longboat Key. Probably he's a beach punk. So he's got this, his son is playing lacrosse, and he's coaching his son. He's got three daughters and a son, and but he's from the Chamonix, PA. They didn't play lacrosse there when he was growing up. He doesn't know much about lacrosse, but he's learned the game. He's coaching an athlete. He can figure it out. But he's coaching the team, and this guy comes over one of the first practices, and he's like, "Hey, coach, great job with the boys today." And Bog says, "Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's just, you know, just trying to make them have fun out there, and you know, thanks." And then a couple of the other dads walk over and go, "Do you know who that guy is?" He's like, "No." He said, "That's Tom Marichek."
Oh.
Walker's coaching Tom Marichek's son.
No kidding.
Lacrosse. He's coaching him lacrosse. So Marichek is working at IMG. And his son is on Tom Bogger's team.
And wow.
Our man is coaching Tom Marichek's son. I just think that's like the funniest story. I'm like, oh, okay. And he was like, okay.
Yeah, Bogger still probably didn't like what you got. He didn't have to look Tom Marichek up.
Yeah, he's like one of the greatest attackmen of all time, Syracuse legend, Hall of Famer.
That's pretty funny. It's
a great story, man.
But good for Tom.
Yeah, it's fun to hear people like, "Yeah, I listen to your podcast. It's really good." Like they're surprised. That's like, well, yeah, thanks.
Spread the word, man. I mean, you say it at the end of every show, you know, hit that, smash that like button, give us a rating, spread the love.
I know, but you know,
start spreading the love.
The lacrosse fans in Southwest Florida, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Yeah, I got, you know, one of my buddies, Brian Bateman, is a loyal listener. He'll take me to task sometimes with the food choices.
Comments. You got some heat for your Dunkin' comments.
You know what? I'll take that comments. Smoke. All day, every day. I'll repeat myself. Dunkin' Donuts are garbage. Garbage. Wow.
I think it's also you trashed the Fractured Prune and Duck Donuts too. And
I didn't trash. I just said I didn't like them.
Oh, okay. But man, you took some heat.
That's all right.
Our buddy, Matt Kinnear, who's been on this pod several times, and obviously he's like the editor at Inside Lacrosse. He lives on Dunkin'. He doesn't run on Dunkin'. He lives on Dunkin'. It's like the fourth food group for Matt Kinnear. And he was hurt.
He said something like, "You're dead to me now." So I'll take Kinnear out on a donut. Again, I'm not a coffee guy, but I'll take him on a donut run. I'll take him to, a bakery that I forgot to mention in my, I think I ended up ranking donuts. There's a nice bakery in Parkville, Fenwick Bakery on Harford Road. They do like the real marshmallow donuts. So shout out Fenwick. Any of our listeners are in the Baltimore area, that's a great place. But we, our producer, Brian Finkelstein for Westwood One, got us these donuts called Fatties. And it's like a pop-up and it's only on the weekends. And it was in a shopping center in East Hartford, which was adjacent to Rentschler Field in the parking lot of a Cabela's. The hunting, I guess, outdoor store.
Yeah.
But he had these, I mean, he brought like cookies and cream. He brought this jelly donut that was great, but he had a maple and bacon donut that was incredible. That's real donuts. Not that garbage, you know, fake dough, sugary chocolate frosting. Oh, the only donut at Dunkin' that's worth anything chocolate cake. The chocolate cake glazed donut is good, and the blueberry donut's pretty good. But like the jelly, the glazed chocolate, awful, awful. Go get yourselves real donuts, people.
The glazed cake chocolate donut is big. Mm. That's, I think that's what the chocolate munchkins are.
And you're right. You're right. Yeah.
So thank you to all of our listeners. You said,
we really appreciate the support and all the interaction. And I know we're probably missing some of the, you know, some
of course. Yeah, sure.
Listeners, but you guys can chirp at us on Twitter when this comes out on Friday.
All right, Dix, it's time for give and go. Last one of the season. And I have heard you mention Jared Bernhardt and his specialness as a athlete. And you likened him to the Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get your list of the best superheroes.
Okay.
You don't have to make them into like lacrosse players or anything. We don't need any kind of analogies. That would be kind of strange. We'll leave that up to better, more imaginative people. But
Terry Foy is Professor X from the X-Men.
Xavier. What's his name? Yeah, Xavier or something like that. Oh my goodness, that's funny. Okay, I'm gonna start. I'm a DC Comics guy. I don't read comic books. I've never read a comic book in my life.
I have a ton of comics at my parents' house from when I was a kid. I was more of a Marvel guy.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, we'll have competing interests here. So I grew up watching the Super Friends cartoon. You know,
awesome.
they walk into the Hall of Justice, and it's this giant, almost castle-like. Cathedral type of building.
It was a bastion of goodness.
Yeah, there's marble and glass everywhere, and they walk in their little superhero suits. It is a cartoon, and there's just computers on all the walls, but there's like no furniture. There's nothing. It's just this giant room.
Wasn't it like a big table? Didn't they sit down at a table?
Oh yeah, they might have. Well, the Legion of Doom.
That was my jam. Legion of Doom.
It looked like a horseshoe crab or something that would come out of a swamp. And I think they had a table that they like.
They didn't have. They did. Or something.
But those are my guys: Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Robin, I guess, but like those are the ones, not even so much the Flash and those other ones, but like those were my favorites. Superman number one, Batman number two, maybe even Aquaman number two, then Batman, then Wonder Woman, and then Robin's probably like fifth. And then if I'm going Marvel, Spider-Man is probably like my dude, but that's my ranking. Superman is the ultimate greatest. Truth, justice, the American way. It's unstoppable, except for kryptonite, which there seems to be a lot of kryptonite available for villains to weaken him. But I really don't think – I've never really come across kryptonite in any of my travels.
No. And, no.
He's unstoppable.
You have to probably look on the black market for kryptonite, see if you can score some. So, okay, much like in professional wrestling where I can't stand Hulk Hogan – I can't stand Superman. I'm not a Superman guy. I thought the comics were okay. Every Superman movie that's been made sucks. Except you'd have to go back to like the Christopher Reeves Superman.
The one where he gives up his powers in Superman 2 and then comes back to the diner, beats up like the trucker.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. That's an amazing scene.
Yeah. But I mean, what made those Superman movies was like Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. And the three creepy people that played the
Zog.
Yeah, Zog. I'm a big Batman fan. I do like Batman, and probably because of the Christian Bale Batman movies. The Christian Bale to me is the best Batman, hands down, no questions asked. You know, Heath Ledger as the Joker was incredible. Tom Hardy as Bane, even though I thought Bane was annoying. With his, you're trying to be philosophical meathead, but it was still a good character. So Batman. So when you talk about Marvel, like one of the best, like one of my favorites is actually Fantastic Four. I like the Fantastic Four. And you know, it's interesting. So sitting here in 2021, you had the comic, but now you also have the movies. So the Fantastic Four movie was awesome. The Avengers movies were okay. They weren't great. But then growing up, Incredible Hulk was a television show. And that was like Bill Bixby.
I love that show. I love that show. Yeah.
Whenever you knew whenever he got pissed, it was lights out.
Lou Ferrigno. Lou Ferrigno is the Hulk.
Lou Ferrigno was a Hulk, but Bill Bixby was Dr. David Banner, right? Is it David Banner?
Yeah, Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner. Bruce.
He had a lot of aliases.
Yeah, yeah. But Iron Man, Captain America, you know, those were. And I did like Super Friends. I watched the Super Friends, but I always liked the Legion of Doom better. Lex Luthor, Bizarro was the opposite Superman, right?
Yeah, Bizarro is awesome. I got Bennett from the library a Bizarro Superman book. There's even a dog. Bizarro has a little dog that's like a made out of stone or whatever. And I'm trying to explain him. He's the opposite of Superman. He says everything backwards and bad.
Yes. But it's funny, like I'm struggling to remember other characters. Who was the guy who was a scuba guy? He was the opposite of Aquaman.
Black Manta.
That's it.
He was in the Aquaman movie. Which was
The Riddler. The Riddler was in Legion of Doom. I liked Riddler.
The Riddler. Penguin.
I don't know if Penguin was in there. Like Penguin, it seemed like all the Batman villains were like independent, they were their own entity. Penguin and
Batman Joker. Has some great villains.
Yeah,
Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze. There was Captain Cold was in Legion of Doom. Captain Cold. Yeah, like a knockoff Mr. Freeze. The Spider-Man movies, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies are pretty cool. The Green Goblin, mm-hmm. William Dafoe was a Green Goblin. And then I love Spider-Man 2, Doc Ock, Dr. Octopus
was awesome. Was good.
And that was, who's that actor? Oh, man.
Alfred Molina?
Yes, that's it. He was awesome.
Good pull.
In that movie. Yeah, so I like. There's a lot of superheroes that I like. The one I do not like, or is my least favorite, is your favorite. That's Superman. I'm not a big Superman.
Well, that's fitting.
Well, I mean, but you know what? Your Duke basketball, Notre Dame football, Superman. I mean,
Johns Hopkins lacrosse, Superman, America. You like the United States?
You like hygiene. I mean, come on.
Like apple pie.
I'm just not a big Superman guy. Sorry.
Wow. That's shocking and sad. Yeah. That's a good place to end then. I guess.
Yeah. Always make me the villain. I'll be Bizarro. I'll be the opposite.
Bizarro. That's cool. Mr. Mitzelpix.
Mitzelpix. That was, the Wonder Twins. Remember the Wonder Twins? The Wonder Twins sucked.
That's when Super Friends jumped the shark when they brought him. Jan and Zayna and Gleek, the little stupid monkey.
Gleek, that was a monkey?
Yeah. Alien monkey. Form of a waterfall. Shape of an eagle.
They should have just been like, form of a complete letdown. In the shape of someone who's going to get beat up.
I know, you got Aquaman and Superman and Batman over there. Can you get the Wonder Twins off my TV screen?
I've never been, I'll be honest with you too. The movie was pretty good, but I've never been a big Aquaman guy either.
I was really excited for the Aquaman movie. I knew my kids would love it. For all these movies are PG-13. So every single one of the superhero movies, and I get it, they're trying to appeal to nerdy comic book guys who are in their 30s or whatever.
Right.
But like, can you please make a PG-rated superhero movie for once for my little kids? It's just every one of them, they have stuff in it. It's a little offensive. But I watched the Aquaman movie and I did not like it the first time I watched it. Okay. I did not. I rewatched it and it was much better. I think my expectations were too high. And then I watched it again. I was like, you know what? That's not bad. There was a lot of the chase scenes and stuff at the end where they're just kind of chasing that, like the villain in it is like a, whatever, the underwater prince or something like that. It was much better the second time around. But yeah, I like that movie too. I like that a lot.
I'd like to see the Aquaman movie starring Vinny Chase. I never saw the Vinny Chase.
I'd love to have seen that too. The Wonder Woman movie was actually really good. Awful. The first one, The first one. The first one was good, man. No, I like the first one a lot.
No one will ever, 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 ever play Wonder Woman like Linda Carter. No, Gal Gadot is a nice looking woman.
She's the most beautiful woman in the world.
No one, will be Linda Carter. Come on.
Yeah, she was just amazing. She used to spin around. My little brother Mike would spin around and what then try to turn into Wonder Woman back in 1976 or whatever, 1977.
You're like, that Mike, theme song too. Ding, 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 Wonder Woman.
I want to see the invisible jet. I still don't think they can pull that off really well. Anyway, if you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and get out and watch some games. Get out. Dix will see you on the circuit this summer.
Summer circuit. Son, yes, sir.
Owen will be out there. There's lots of club and summer lacrosse action. And the PLL, man, what a weekend. The PLL, that first game between the Redwoods and the Cannons.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, awesome game. I was watching it with some friends. We have dinner with them almost every Friday, and they're not lacrosse fans. They've become fans over the course of the season because on the Friday night Big Ten games, I'll make sure we put that on while we're eating dinner. And, you know, they're like, oh, there's Dixie, blah, 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 you know. And then my buddy, the dad, would come over and watch a lot of games, especially when the conference tournament started. And he became a real fan. Like, he was like, this is a fun game. Like, this is, I can get into this. We watched that game on Friday night. They subscribed to Peacock just to get that game. We watched it, and we were like loving it. We were really into it. The only person who wasn't, the only one who played college lacrosse that was sitting there, Amy Flynn, just not interested in professional lacrosse at all. And everyone else is hanging on the edge of their seat watching that game. And our boy TD. TD, one of our favorite college players. Welcome great to debut. The pros. What a debut. What a great kid. And I was happy for him. Everyone have a great summer. And we'll be talking to you soon.